Today's interview is with Hayley Carr. I think I met Hayley through the B School Circle. She moved to Byron, became quite good friends with Jules Galloway, who is one of the top five most downloaded of my episodes. If you want to go back and listen to that, it's episode 71. Anyway, Hayley kind of came into my world. She was like a bright, shining beacon of happiness. I don't know, she's got this really cool energy about her. And I was really excited to get her on the podcast because she has a really interesting backstory. She was a world champion at karate or martial arts, and that takes so much dedication. And I can't even fathom the amount of work that's involved in getting to that kind of level in any sport. And then Hayley ended up spending almost, I think it was over 2 years in bed with chronic fatigue. And now she's in this really happy, chill place in her life where she's doing work with soul and with impact and with meaning and purpose and just without the struggle attached to it. So I feel like I'm kind of in a similar place, and I was just really stoked to be able to sit down with Hayley for an hour and shoot the breeze, because it's not often we get to do that. So I'm really excited about this episode. There are plenty of little gold nuggets littered generously throughout. So enjoy. Here is Hayley Carr. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
When I was 15, I started martial arts. I was at high school, and I actually think that martial arts probably saved my life in a lot of ways, because I was one of those really energetic kids who was always, I wasn't up to mischief, but I know that, I was up to a little bit of mischief, but I probably would have gotten really bad had I not had somewhere to direct my energy. From the age of 15, well, actually, I started martial arts when I was a real little kid, and I thought it was really, really boring, because we couldn't do any fighting. So I stopped, and my brother kept going. And my brother is 3 years younger than me. And then when he got to high school, we were having this argument down the hallway one day, and he was saying things under his breath. And I could hear them, so I was getting really riled up and angry at him. So I ran down the hallway to push him, and he just did this swift little block, and I ended up hitting the wall, like sideways into the wall. I was like, that's it. I'm coming to karate with you on Monday. That's it. So when people ask me how I got into martial arts, I'm like, it is the most uninspiring story. I literally just wanted to be able to keep beating up my brother as he got better. So I ended up doing martial arts there, but it was really, and for the first couple of months, I remember saying to my instructor, how far can you get without wearing one of those white things? Because I was so self-conscious as a 15-year-old. I didn't want anyone to know that I did karate. I was really embarrassed about it. I thought it was really dorky, but I really enjoyed it when I was there. And I started to learn how to dig really deep beyond my comfort zone and go beyond pain thresholds, like, and understand how to push myself in ways that I had never experienced before. It was really powerful for me as a young teenager. And so I was graded pretty quickly through the ranks because I did a lot of training and I worked really, really hard. Within about a year, I was competing in world titles. So I won my first world title when I was 15. And from there, I kept competing in a national squad, kept training in a national squad. And every couple of years, we would have more world titles, and I slowly made my way up the ranks through the belts, through the age divisions, and eventually when I was in year 12 at school, I think I won, no, 2005, so I was a couple of years out of school, I won my first open weight black belt world title. So it was kind of all good. I was doing really well at school, not terms of marks, I used to sleep at school, doing well while I was at school at karate, traveling and training and stuff like that. And I ended up in 2007 or 2006, I lost a friend in a car accident. I was really struggling with the loss, and I'd broken up with a guy, and I was at home, and I was hating uni. I used to study interior architecture, and I loved doing the design stuff and the architecture, but I hated the way that we had to force ourselves to create within these structures, and it was really tough. I was pulling all-nighters all the time, trying to keep up with my training and whatnot, and I was really, really, really stressed. It was bad. My auntie invited me to come to a seminar where you could learn about goals, and I thought, yeah, okay, whatever, I'll come with you. And at that seminar, it was a basics, like an NLP basics kind of weekend. It was free, and they said, right, you know, you can set a goal, and it can to do with money or to do with your sport or to do with relationships or whatever you want, and it will happen. Well, this is how I remember it. Probably didn't say that, but that's how I remember it. I was like, well, if you think, because I remember the guy saying, if you set a goal and it actually happens, I want you to make it so big and feel so impossible that if it actually did happen, this would be one of the most important moments of your life. And I was like, right. So I didn't just set one goal, I set like seven. And I was like, okay, I'm totally dirt broke right now. I want to go on an overseas trip, like to England, to compete in the next world titles. And I'd been told that I could never compete again because my shoulder had been dislocated at that stage, and I thought I needed a reconstruction and all that. So I was told I couldn't compete. So I was like, that feels impossible. If I could go over there and then have a holiday at the end, that'd be sweet. But I don't just want to win what I won last time. I want to win the double event, which no one had ever done before. And I want my brother to win the male of the double. Like, that would be so cool. And I want my sister, who also did karate, to win the junior female. Like, this is getting near impossible right now. And I want to meet my soulmate, and I want to make more money, and I want to move to the beach. About, no joke, maybe I think it was like 10 weeks later, I was in Mykonos with the man of my dreams at the time. And we were talking about moving in together and by the beach. Everything had happened the way that I wanted it to happen. And it was like, holy crap. I want to know how that worked. How, like, my brother had won, I had won. I went home, my boss gave me a pay rise, we moved to the beach. I was like, what just happened in my mind, in my brain, to make all that actually work? So that was 2007. I ended up quitting my job because I became fascinated with the mind and the unconscious and neurolinguistics, and signed up to learn all about it. But in 2008, I got really, really sick. So my partner that I had fallen in love with had terminal cancer, and he's still alive. He's thriving at the moment. That was really, really tough. I was 22. He was 33. I wasn't sure. I thought he was going to die. And he asked me to keep it a secret. So I was harboring this huge secret, stressed every day and every night that my partner was going to die at any point. I didn't understand it. And I ended up getting very, very sick with chronic fatigue syndrome. I didn't see the link at the time that I was holding a big secret and not knowing how to deal. We also didn't talk about it very often because he sort of wanted to stay really positive, and so he would say, I don't live like I've got cancer, so it's fine. But there were so many unsaid things in our relationships and undealt with issues, like what happens if you do die, and like, I'm going to have to take care of you, so I need to start a business that's going to make sure I can be at home. And I really gave up everything that I was.
Yeah, because there's a difference between being positive and avoidance, don't you think? And it sounds like that was a lot of avoidance going on.
Yeah.
Under the positivity guise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We can say that now. Really, I think it was actually just survival.
Yeah. You know, totally.
When you're in that time and you're being faced every day with, I don't know when my last, like, I don't know when I'm going to get the call to say I have to go back for chemo and it's going to be over. Because he got told when he was 25 that he wasn't going to see 30. And we got together when he was 32, and now he's 42, something like that. So he's been living his life for a very long time with this impending doom. We spent 6 years together, and we really chose to dig our head in the sand about the reality of what was going on, and we didn't talk about a lot of stuff. It was super stressful. But we had a lot of great things going on in our lives. So we kept training and competing in martial arts. He was my instructor. And I don't think I've actually ever told this story like really so publicly before, but yeah, I was struggling on the inside with how to deal with the fact that everything looked fine on the outside, and on the inside I wasn't sure what was going to happen in my life. There were things that I wanted that I didn't think would ever happen, and I was trying to deal with that on my own because the whole thing was a secret and we couldn't talk about it at home because we needed to stay positive and he didn't want to talk about it. So it was really tough, and I ended up getting sick. 2008, I got sick, and I didn't really get out of bed till midway through 2010, probably the end of 2010, with chronic fatigue. But honestly, I think that time in my life was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I was forced to surrender to what was happening to my body, and my body was giving me a huge sign that I was on the wrong path. And I learned to listen to my intuition, and I learned to slow down, and I learned to trust that what was happening was the right thing. And I became really strong in those years, even though I was physically so weak.
I've just been exploring this with some people in my Show Up Speak Up group this morning. Do you feel like you had, like, the chronic fatigue part? Obviously, then it's like the universal boot part, right? But did you have like the tap on the shoulder and the slap on the, in the face before the full bedridden chronic fatigue that you can see now, but perhaps you didn't really see then?
You know what? I think I did. But I didn't see, like, it was only really, really subtle beforehand. If I looked back and really explored, I would be able to see that first life was tickling me with a feather.
Yeah.
Going, hey, pay attention. You know, a few little gut issues here and there when I was at school. And then I was at university. And so I got thrown a lemon at my head when, you know, a few things just happened at university and I wasn't happy and I was struggling with my energy. And then it was like, my friend passed away and I had to give up my state team training in order to finish university, and they wanted to fail me in the first year, and I broke my hand, and because I broke my hand I couldn't finish my first year. So yeah, there were lots of different boots, but they didn't look like they were related to anything. Mm. And the final thing I think was in that year when my friend passed away, I had psoriasis all over my body and I didn't even know what it was. I was just like, my skin's weird. It's all flaky and gross. I had no clue that that was related to my emotional state, because I was that far into it and that close to it that I couldn't see what was happening for myself. So the way that it looked was, one day we were out training. I'm going home. I'm going to bed and I'm not going to work tomorrow. And he was like, okay. And then the next day I was like, I'm not going to work tomorrow either. The next day, the next day, the next day. And I didn't go back to work.
And so were you still with your partner at this time, like while you were bedridden?
When I was bedridden, yes, we were together. And he went through chemo and I was sleeping on the couch, and then he would be perfectly healthy because he could handle the chemo really well. It was just kind of maintenance chemo. Every time it popped up, we thought, oh, my God, is this it? And it wasn't. And, yeah, he was amazing. He looked after me while I looked after him, and we were just a big sack of shit at home trying to cope with life. I came out of that a different woman, and I came back in 2009 to my sport. I won another world title, and it just felt kind of didn't feel as good the last time. I was really proud of myself because it meant closure on what I'd just gone through for the past 3 years. But what had been awakened in me, I guess, at that time was that I was really deeply unhappy. That sort of spurred on what was the worst breakup of my life. There was so much tied into that. It was really messy, not because of him, just because of the amount of guilt that I felt about needing to take time for myself to become independent and be an adult on my own. And because of his illness, I felt tremendous guilt at walking away from that relationship. So that ended in 2013, and I decided that I had always wanted to actually run my business via my laptop, run my coaching business. I was already running my coaching business after I won the last world title in 2011. A lot of people sort of started asking for my help, and I had been building up a business very slowly just through referral and word of mouth. It was by no means a legit full-time business, but it's what I had. But by 2013, I was running workshops and having a lot of fun and running it full time. So there's a bit that I left out of the story, actually, which was after I got better, I was able to do a couple of jobs, full-time and part-time, and I ran my business at night times and on the weekends, or I had a sales job at one point and I would talk to my coaching clients in the car in my lunch break. So I did that for a bit and then went full-time. Yeah, and so 2013 was the year that I sort of went, okay, like it's done. I have to move on and do something else. So I decided to run my business from my laptop. I took off and I flew to New York, was going to have a month and just trial it out. But the minute I landed there, I realized that I didn't have anything anymore to keep me from doing what I wanted. Nobody was ever doing that. Nobody was ever keeping me from doing what I wanted, except it was me. And I kept, you know, as soon as one world title would finish, I'd be like, right, when's the next one? And I'd be like, I've got 2 years to get to the next one, and just constantly training. So it was a really huge decision, first of all, to leave that relationship, and then because I relied on him a lot as well. And then secondly, to go, I'm not going to compete in the next world titles, and I don't know why. And then it freed up this entire year ahead where every night, if you'd ask me, what are you doing? I'd say training. And all of a sudden my calendar was completely empty. So I had all this space and room to breathe. And that's when I realized, oh my goodness, I can go if I want to, I can go now. So I did. So within about 10 days after making this realization, which took a few months.
Mess about.
I got on a plane and went to New York, and then it just kicked off a whole new thing for me. I met people over there. I ended up living on their couches. My friend Jackie, I lived on a couch in New York for about a month, and I went to Mexico, and while I was there, I met on Skype another woman called Lanan, and she asked me to teach at a retreat in Costa Rica, which was like 4 months away. And so I just kept extending my trip. But every time I had to extend my trip, I freaked out for a minute, almost looking for permission for someone else to say, yes, Hayley, you can do that. It's okay. It's your life. And then I realized, okay, yeah, I can do that. And then I just kept going. So I ended up traveling for about 8 months, just on intuition, really. I didn't have plans. I didn't have money. It just kept coming in as I was deciding to do new things. It would just sort of show up, which was really...
So how did you... you've just come out of this really, what I imagine it takes to be a world champion at anything is a lot of routine and structure and goal setting and drive and ambition. And then you go straight from that to just floating around the globe.
Yeah.
What was going on for you internally? Was there like a struggle for you to go from that to that?
I think a part of me was really craving it. It felt much more natural to me to actually, at a soul level, I guess, to not have the structure. But from a logical or ego perspective, I was craving the structure, but the structure was actually holding me back in a lot of ways because I'm a pretty sensitive kind of human being. So that structure, it was all I knew, but it never really worked for me. So we would travel a long way to go to our classes to train karate with the best instructors, and I would sleep most of the way because I was usually pretty exhausted. And in order to get everything done, I was working full-time. Before I burnt out, I was working full-time, and then I would drive 2 hours across Sydney to train until probably 12 p.m. or 2 in the morning, and then I would drive another hour home to get a 4 hour sleep and then go back to uni or go to work full time. So that was probably a key to my burning out.
Yeah.
It was a combination. I think you can do things for so long, but combining that with emotional trauma that was sort of the end of me. When I was traveling, I really enjoyed having the no structure, but you're right, it was super weird because I wasn't used to being able to do whatever I wanted, which is why I kept looking for permission or looking for someone to turn to say, is this cool? Like, can I actually keep doing this? Is it too much? Am I being selfish? Is this bad? But I ended up, I didn't really take the best care of myself while I was overseas. I sort of got a bit overstimulated And I think I needed it because coming out of such an intense, it was 15 years that I was really, really highly performing in my martial arts. I swung completely the opposite way and was like, whoa, just do whatever I want. And then arriving home after that was, I just fell in a heap again. I was, all the emotions that I had left behind, I thought I had sort of worked through as best I could while I was away, but they were all still there waiting for me. And I had to learn to sort of rebuild my life again and face all the things that I was running toward, a life that I really wanted, which was to be able to work from anywhere and be independent. And I got that. I think I was also running away from facing the difficulty of going through a breakup like that. It was really hectic, really hectic.
Yeah, I bet. And not like, I guess also because if you've spent 15 years and in fact, pretty much all of your adult life to that point, even some of your adolescence as a certain person, and then to have all that stripped away.
Yes.
And no longer have that crutch of who you are.
I did not even know who I was, Carly. And it's really interesting. I'm so glad you brought that up because I spent 3 months in Chile right at the end of the trip and I was in this incubator, like an entrepreneurial boot camp thing. It sucked. It was the worst. It was horrible. but we sort of, I had a really good sort of group of friends there that we became very close over 3 months. And I remember saying to one of them, Jackie, that I felt really uncomfortable in social situations for the first time in my life. And I realized it was because I wasn't being introduced as, this is Hayley, she's the world champion. It was, this is Hayley. And nobody knew anything about me because I was just Hayley. And I didn't tell people that I had done all these amazing things. I was just me. So I didn't come with this like, oh, she's done this and she's done that. So I was all of a sudden, it was like I felt like I sort of had to prove myself, but I didn't even know how to do that. And I didn't even know how to talk to people without them having already known who I was, either through my partner or because they'd heard about me or something like that. It was such a weird, weird experience. And then I was like, well, who am I without all these trophies? And one of my friends gave me the feedback, you know, if I didn't know what you'd done, I would never have guessed that you were a world champion martial artist because you do not show up like that. You don't act like that. And it was super hard feedback to hear, but I didn't even know what I was supposed to act like or look like, even if I was that. I was so detached, or I don't know if that's the right word. I was just so out of touch, actually, with who I was or who I was meant to be. It was tough. Yeah, so came back to Australia, fell in a heap again, realized that there was still a lot of stuff that needed to be dealt with. I'd also fallen in love with someone. This is where it just gets even more messy. I fell in love with a guy while I was overseas and I flew across the world to go and see him. And when I got there, he told me that he'd fallen in love with his lesbian best friend and they were together now and that I had to go home.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it was gut-wrenching and awful. And it was one of those whirlwind kind of trips where I ended up back at home going, am I even supposed to be here? This is just so weird. So I decided to take a bit of time for myself and I wanted to go back to the US, but I decided to move up to Byron Bay from Sydney for 3 months and just take some time for me, see how I went, because I didn't want to move straight back into going home with my parents and see how I went. And I ended up staying in Byron Bay for 3 years. It was fantastic. And I think from there, that's just kind of spurred on a new sort of adventure of understanding what's possible when you go, I want this, I'm just going to go and do it. And when you give yourself permission to go for the things that you want and when you ask for what you want and when you experiment with things. And I failed at a lot of things when I was in Byron. It was some of the best of times and it was some of the toughest of times as well. I've moved from Byron only just almost a year ago to the day. At the end of next month.
Wow. Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Oh my God. What? Yeah.
And I ended up falling in love with someone who was just coming through town for a couple of days and I decided to take another risk and go across the country and move in with him. All the while, of course, growing my business. but doing it in a way that feels good for me now and feels energizing. And I realized through all that, that it wasn't the travel that was the magic pill for it all. It was learning to be present. Because, well, I got really depressed. I'll tell you about this. I got really depressed a couple of years into my living in Byron Bay. And I went to go and see a doctor and I said, look, I'm depressed. I'm not going to take medication, but I just want you to tell me if I am or not, because I think I am, and then I'll do something else about it. And he said, I think that you are, but tell me why. And I said to him, well, I feel like traveling is my purpose, but I can't do my purpose because I'm so friggin' tired. I can't travel. And he said, tell me more. Like, what? How do you feel when you're traveling? Tell me what happens when you travel, why you think it's your purpose. And I said, well, when I'm traveling, you know, everything just flows. It's like I meet people and my senses are heightened and money just flows and everything's taken care of and I'm super creative and I smell all the smells and I taste all the tastes and it's the best feeling. I just have so much energy and life just flows when I'm traveling. And right now I want to travel but I can't because I'm too tired and that's making me really sad. And he said to me, Haley, traveling doesn't make you feel that way because traveling is your purpose. You feel that way when you travel because when you travel, you're fully in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to prescribe you any medication. I'm going to prescribe you mindfulness. And for the next 18 months, I worked with an amazing lady up in Byron Bay or up in Ocean Shores near Byron on mindfulness. And it changed so many things for me.
Yeah. So, because... Well, I had a similar experience, I guess. Just when I was diagnosed with depression, I thought it was about my purpose too. But yeah, but it really is much simpler than that a lot of the time, right? Like, I don't know. I think sometimes we put this whole huge amount of pressure on finding our purpose when really it is to be present. And that can be quite hard, but also very, very simple, you know, with practice. It's a practice, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you've done over the last, you know, 18 months or so to help you become more present with where you're at?
Well, it's really funny because she taught me like two things and I just kept going back to her because I loved practicing it all the time. It was that simple, but it just felt so good. So really it was just sit in front of something and admire it and look at it and don't just skim over the surface. Like, for example, right now in my office, I'm looking at a feather that's on the windowsill. And she would say to me, look at that feather and describe it to me as if I'm blind and I can't see it and tell me all the things you appreciate about it. And as I would go through and describe this feather, I actually can see more and more and more and more detail in this feather. And I can appreciate all of the intricacies that's a part of this feather instead of just going, that's a feather, it's on a windowsill, and that's it, and having a surface-level experience of the same moment. And so she used to say to me, like, just sit with things and don't make any assessment of them, your feelings, just get curious and allow them to be there. And she used to say the words, give them space, give your feelings space all of the time. And so that's what she really taught me, was get out in nature, look at the things around you and just do one thing at a time and really appreciate what you see. Notice things, notice the detail, notice the way the light catches it or the wind is touching it. And I'm even like breathing really deep, just like doing this practice right now. Because it's taught me to slow down. And the more I slow down, the more everything else speeds up in a good way. Business speeds up, friendships speed up, healing speeds up, the inevitable speeds up the more I slow down.
And so who are you now?
Now I am a coach. I am an awesome chick who lives in the southwest of Victoria, who just does her own fucking thing whenever she wants. And yeah, like I feel calm, just feel calm all of the time. And I feel spacious because I'm not interested in the hype, not interested in keeping up with Joneses or keeping up with what I used to think I had to keep up with to make things happen. And I still have that 9-time world champion inside of me. She will never not be there. I can relate to the struggles and the trials and tribulations of high achievers every single day, because that stuff is ingrained in who I am as a person. And I also went completely the opposite way, like, don't worry about having goals and just let life flow and it's all good. And now I've come somewhere in the middle where I understand how to take leaps, how to get what I want. I love helping people. It really energizes me. But I don't feel so attached to outcomes as I used to be, or needing to have a purpose or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same place these days. The push isn't there. It's really about the attachment to outcomes, I think, that has been the game changer for me.
Yeah.
I'm just in a much bigger place of acceptance these days, where I know that I don't really have to do any more or be any more or have any more. And that just allows me, it's much more spacious, right? Because it's like, I'm not in a needing place right now.
Yes, it's so good. I used to say, like, I'm so glad that I went through that struggle of learning to accept who I was and learning to be mindful, because, man, like, needing to travel as your purpose, that's so expensive and draining. Like, now I can just sit outside and look at the sky with a cup of tea and I'm just as happy, because I understand it's about being present, not being in Rome or something like that.
Yeah, because it's not about where in the world you are. It's about where in you are, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And from that place, so much, you can just create so much magic in terms of, you know, slowing down and getting clear on what you want and making a decision to never do something that you don't want to do ever again, or deciding to ask for what you really want in a certain situation instead of skirting around the surface. You know, when you get mindful, it affects the whole rest of your life, because you stop, it's such an Aussie expression, beating around the bush with the truth, or like skirting around the edges. It's just like, this is or it isn't. I can do something about this or I can't. This is the truth. This is not the truth. Oh, it just feels so good. I tell you what, when I changed my business to suit me instead of doing what I thought I should do because of what I saw everyone else doing, which doesn't make any sense because none of them actually taught me how to do what I do anyway, everything changed. Like, I stopped getting up super early, because I run into walls super early. If I wake up and I'm still tired, like, it's not a good idea. But I was doing early mornings and later nights because I thought that's what other people needed of me. And actually, when I started running my business according to my own circadian rhythms and running and taking appointments at times that feel good for me, it feels sustainable and I can keep growing, and it's not hard at all, because I don't constantly wake up thinking, oh my God, I've booked this appointment too early or on the weekend or something like that again. And as soon as I started making those changes and only doing things in a way that feels good, business all of a sudden just felt like, oh, it's not hard anymore. This is actually going to give me exponential growth, because it feels easy. I feel like I can actually keep doing this forever and ever. And if I can be consistent, then that's what will help me grow my business. But trying to do things the way everyone else was doing them, or fitting it in, or doing the hustle or whatever, was unsustainable for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally. Because my last year, I guess, has been just a roller coaster, you know. So I had Radcasters; it had been going well at the start, and then I just became increasingly attached to it needing to be something. And as the more and more attached I got, the less and less the business performed the way that I wanted to. So then I started to throw the shit at the walls and try to do things the way that they should have been done. This funnel, this formula, this Facebook ads, this webinar, this. And the more and more I did it, the more and more exhausted I became, because it was just not my style. And I was just like, it just did not feel good to me to be pitching on webinars. And there are other ways that I can sell that don't feel like shit to me, but I was doing it the way that I thought I needed to be doing it, because that's the way that everyone who was having success was doing it, or so it seemed. And so, so it just became this. Instead of flow, it was like the opposite. I was just on this, It was like the ball had, you know, like the stone on top of the hill had gathered so much momentum that I was just rolling with it, but it wasn't heading in the direction that I wanted to go.
Yeah.
But there was nothing I could do about it because I was just, here I was going round and round and round and round faster and faster and faster until it just hit the wall. And I just ended up on the beach bawling my eyes out, just, yeah, ready to walk away.
Thank God you did.
Yeah.
Thank goodness you did.
From that day, it's just felt ease and flow and it's not like my life's a dream now. I still hit up against stuff, but it's just different now because the attachment to me needing to be someone else is no longer there. You know, I don't have to fit into a round hole as a square peg. I can just be the square peg, you know.
In a square hole.
Yeah.
You make your own hole.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just been so freeing for me because now and as soon as that realization happened, because my realization was I can get a job.
Mm.
I don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like no one is forcing me to be an entrepreneur except me. And I can go and get a job doing anything, you know, like I go and stack shelves at Woolies. Fine. No, my pride had gone. Not that I think that stacking shelves at Woolies is a shit job. I'm just saying for me.
That's you being too sensitive now.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like I just had lost where the money needed to come from. I was happy for it to come from wherever. And so then it was like, easy, cool. I'll just go back to writing my book and see what happens. And then shit just shifted.
Oh,
and I just paid my BAS statement within like 2 minutes of receiving it from my bookkeeper, which is unheard of, with no stress, and it just felt really good. I have to say there is still that little piece of doubt in me that's like, can it stay like this? But I think I just feel like I understand now that everything is really very, very temporary. And what we're struggling with right now will not be what we're struggling with even 2 or 3 days from now.
If there's one thing I've learned from working with lots of different high achievers through coaching, is that we think that our problems are going to go away when we do something new or fix something or get married or meet the right guy or have a baby or make $1 million in our business or whatever, win the world title. And our problems don't go away. They get more complex. They get bigger. You've got more responsibility. So it's not about never having problems. It's about thinking bigger than your problems. And I think you said it really well, which was letting go of your expectation of needing to be something or have something or needing something out of what you're doing. When we can let go of our expectations or having an attachment, I think you said, to the outcome, it allows us to think bigger than the type of person who has the problem, so we can become the person who doesn't have that problem. But we will still have another problem. We don't not have problems. That's just the way it goes when you're growing. But knowing how to think and knowing how to get yourself back on the horse when you feel like you've fallen off the horse, that's more important than never falling off the horse or never having a problem.
Totally.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch.
Biggest fear
is running out of money. Always has been. Never do. Something miraculous usually happens, even when I really, really risk it. But it gives me so much anxiety.
Always, right? Like, I know that feeling so well. Mm. And that's what I was talking about with the temporary thing, right? Because it's like during my big meltdown moment on the beach, just before that, I had realized that the power of zero is just what the power that I give it, you know? So so I knew that because I'd had this big 6 months of just feeling like I was stealing from Peter to give to Paul, and I was using this kind of language, you know, like I just feel like there's never enough. I'm stealing from this guy to give to this guy. And it just kept on going to my bank and seeing close to zero. And I'd never been at that point before. I'd had tight moments, but not like zero and in the red. And it was just like, holy shit. But then I just kept on reminding myself, it's okay. You've been here before. And we know that something happens right when we need it to.
Yes. I went through a couple of months ago where I went way into the red, like way into the red. And I thought, oh my God, it's really happening. The thing I fear is actually really happening. And I'm not dead.
Yes.
And I'm okay. And I still have a computer. And I, oh, shit, it looks the same.
Yeah.
And I realize that, oh, actually, I'm okay. I've just got to go back out there and do my thing. And it was actually a really good experience.
Well, yeah, sometimes realizing your biggest fears is actually good, isn't it? Because then it's like, oh, hang on. You know, one of mine was throwing a party and nobody showing up. And then I threw the office collective party and nobody showed up and it was horrible. But then it was also so freeing because I was like, hang on, I've been afraid of this my entire life and now I've done it and it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
that is, well, I'll ask you what freedom is later. what are you struggling with right now?
Okay, I wouldn't call it a struggle, but I'm noticing a lot that I'm focusing on putting out fires and being remedial instead of being transformational with my own thinking. Someone pointed it out to me recently. I was like, oh, I just need to make a little bit more money to do this, 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 and this. And then he said, well, why don't you just make 10 times that amount of money? It's probably going to be easier than trying to create that. And I thought, oh, my goodness, like I'm thinking so small. And it was actually so liberating to hear that suggestion to think about making 10 times more. And it was actually easier. I went away and was able to begin doing that. And it was so much easier than trying to, like I say, put out the fire. So the thing that I'm really, like, honestly, I can't say I'm struggling with it. I'm really working on it. I'm noticing it a lot is opportunities where I can stop putting out fires and stop being remedial with myself and with others, wanting to just jump in and save someone, and instead empower them to empower themselves, or for myself, choose to slow down and think 10 times bigger than whatever small little problem I'm causing myself to worry about.
Yeah, that is cool. I like that. We do so often limit ourselves. Yeah, that's cool. Recurring voice. Have you got anything going on, you know, evil bitch in your head style that's telling you a whole bunch of stuff, or have you got her relatively under control these days?
She is relatively under control, but when I go to do something really out of my comfort zone, she's like, oh, yeah, here we go, and she comes out to play. So recently my partner and I we started this adventure of looking for the dream property, and we started so early, like before we're ready kind of thing. We decided to just go and look, and then we found something we really liked. So then we called up a mortgage broker to see if we could actually do it. And then it became this big thing like, oh my God, let's do it right now. And during the process of learning how to buy a property and get loans from the bank in that kind of way, and I realized just how much I haven't been paying attention to some real world finance stuff, and I was holding on to old advice, like, for example, pay the least amount of tax as possible instead of show that you have a high taxable income, pay tax, and then you can easily borrow. And the voice that came up in my head was this tremendous sense of guilt for having my own business. Like, oh, if only I wasn't so selfish to have my own business, then I would be able to show an income to this bank person and we would easily be able to get this loan and we wouldn't have to work out creative ways to do it, because for the last 10 years I've lowered my tax by charging everything ever back to my business. So it was a huge amount of guilt, and I didn't even realize it was there, but when I saw it and spoke to my partner about it, he's like, what are you talking about? That's just so silly. And I'm like, yeah, I know it sounds silly, but it's there. I've just realized I've had this massive guilt about feeling like having my own business is not a real, because it's fun or something.
Yeah. No, but I relate big time. Because
did
we've,
you?
Yeah. Because, yes. I mean, we owned a house a few years ago, well, 10 years ago, which we bought on the Mid-North Coast because we couldn't afford to buy here. And there was a whole bunch of red flags. Anyway, that's a story for another day. But I bought it during Mercury retrograde and sold it 8 years later for less than what we'd bought it. But getting the finance for that was a fucking nightmare. And I realized just the amount of power I had given to the bank or to the broker or whoever. And we've just gone through the process again of we got an opportunity to buy. And it's a really long story, but when we spoke to the bank again, it was like I went, if you will give me this money, I can see my business as a success.
Yes.
You know, because it's legit or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think like I've never really had a proper full-time job except when I worked as an interior architect for a very short amount of time after school, like when I was at university. And I've gone through the last 10 years of my business turns 10 next year, watching friends, family, loved ones, you know, other people that I've just grown up with have sort of, I guess I wanted to call it a real job just then, and be able to do all of these things quite significantly easier than what it feels like it feels for me because I've got a business. So it's harder to get money to do things or to get a loan or a mortgage or whatever.
I know it is. And, oh, God, yeah, because I've had that guilt too because, you know, my one career was really sales and I left that when I was 25. And I think to myself, God, if I had stayed in that, then I could be 10 steps ahead of where I am right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably be buying my third property and, you know, and doing all these things that I've never been able to afford because I'm self-employed. Mm. And yeah, but then also my cousin was speaking to me just recently. She's just moved to this area and she was saying how she went back to Melbourne for a funeral. And every time she goes back to her old life there, she sees all her friends and they're having kids and they're, you know, buying houses and they're buying their second houses now in their early 30s. And she instead has lived all over the place in Perth and then in New Zealand. And now she's moved here. And she's like, how do you not just want to pack up and go back to that because it seems easier?
It's not easier though.
It's not, is it?
I think, yeah, like I've considered it so many times. In my weak moments, I'm like, maybe I should just get a job and do, like, I would be miserable. I wouldn't be able to cope because I don't think, when I got diagnosed with chronic fatigue all those years ago, they said to me, you'll never be able to have a normal job ever again. And it sounded like a death sentence, but the truth is I've never had a normal job ever again. It's been the best thing ever. And I don't think I could go back to normal work. Sort of even if I wanted to, because I couldn't do the 9 to 5. It would just kill my spirit. I couldn't do it. So it sort of seems easier, but I don't think it is easier. Yeah. I think it's just a different tasting shit sandwich.
Yeah.
Be willing to put up with a certain flavor of shit in your life and
yeah.
Depends what kind of shit sandwich you take.
Absolutely. I actually said to my cousin, yeah, but, you know, like we also have to look at the magic that is in the life that is outside the comfort zone, right? So it's like while it might be cushier or safer to be living in the burbs with my 2.5 kids and my house and my investment property and my lot of super and some stocks and all that kind of jazz.
Yeah.
My life is full of, while there is struggle too, it's also full of excitement and possibility and it feels like freedom to me. And as one of my highest values, I know that other option for me just would be the noose around my neck.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one.
So failure, what does failure mean to you these days?
These days, I used to be really afraid of failure, Carly. Yeah, being a high-achieving martial artist, you know, failure was not an option. But today, it is just an opportunity for me to expand my range. I am quite happy now to fail spectacularly. In public and feel shit and be embarrassed and all of that, because I know that once I've done it once, I'm not going to die. I'm okay. And it means I can go there. You know, I think a lot of people just play within what they know they're not going to fail at. And so their range is really, really narrow. And if you do something that's totally outrageous and you totally screw up at it, at least you've gone there and your range is a little bit wider. So for me, failing means, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, it's really only us that's worried about that, right, as the person failing. Because when I had my big spectacular visual, you know, failure, people were like, yeah, but you gave it a go.
That's right.
So they're around going, but you gave it a go. That's inspiring. Sure, you know, it didn't go as planned, but hell, man, you went for it. And where they're going, everyone's going to think I'm, you know, less than or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not the reality.
No. And then you walk away from that situation and you're like, you can apply all the things you learned to the next thing you do. All that success and all that failure, all those lessons are transferable to the next thing. Like it doesn't make you a smaller person. It makes you a person who's able to handle a lot more scope in their life. And if you're okay with failure, you can do anything. Like you can just put your hand at anything because you don't give a fuck.
Yeah. And that's just brave and sexy, I reckon.
I don't know about sexy, but it is brave. Sometimes it doesn't look so sexy.
No, it might not look sexy, but it feels sexy. Anyway, I don't even know why that came out of my mouth. success. What does success mean to you?
Success. Okay, I have 5 lifestyle factors, and if my life fits into those, I am feeling really successful. And I made these up a long, long time ago before I knew that what I do now even existed. But it was to be able to work from anywhere, not be tied down to a place, not necessarily to work from anywhere, but just to not be tied down to a place, to have freedom of time, to have enough money coming in that I can do the things that I want to do when I want to do them. And obviously to have the time to do them as well, to be surrounded by great people or work with great people, have a community around me, and to make a contribution. So if I can put my head on the pillow at night and say I did those things, or if I have a job or a vocation that fulfills those 5 factors for me, I know that I'm winning in my own race.
I like that because it's adjustable too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's not so specific that it's attaching you to certain outcomes or having certain expectations around things, but instead it's just opening you up to, as long as those things are covered, then that's good. Life is a success.
Yeah.
That's cool. And freedom, lastly, what does freedom mean to you?
Freedom, like you, is one of my highest values. And it's hard to kind of explain what it means, but I would say it means for me just choice. So not having to feel like I have to do anything, more like I get to, or I want to, or I choose to.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
that's what it is to me. For me, it is being able to choose, and or just realizing that I have choice, knowing that I have choice. And then for me, the second element to that is creating from that choice.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I made a decision not so long ago now that, well, actually, I realized why for about 5 years I made almost to the dollar exactly the same amount of money, no matter whether I doubled my prices, tripled my prices, worked less, got sick, traveled, didn't work, worked more. It was like the same amount. And I thought, that's really weird. And I realized that I had this unconscious idea that growing my business was going to burn me out. Like if I did any more, I'd have to work really hard and I had to do things a way that I thought I had to based on what I saw. So my new choice was that I only grow my business, or in fact, I only do anything if it's going to give me more of the lifestyle factors that I love. So if it's going to give me more time to do nothing, more energy, more inspiration, working less, you know, all those factors, I only grow my business, or I only do things if it matches up to that. And it's made things really fun, really easy as well.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Well, you can find me at hayleycarr.tv, which is my website. And I'm a transformational coach for high achievers, leaders, high performers, and those who feel like they should be that, but they're not. And so come onto my website, and if you want to have a conversation with me, you can find out how to do it there.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper, and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
I'm getting a takeaway from this, so I'll share what that is, and I think that could probably be useful for others, is that when we detach from needing a certain outcome, and when we let go of using things outside of us to make us feel a certain way, we come back to who we are, and we get to slow down, and we come back to being in the present moment, and that's where all of our power is. And that's where you get to start from and create anything that you want.
So true. And so it can be so easy and so fucking hard. But I think that's the whole thing, right? It really is about acceptance. Of like, we cannot be in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. And when we really understand that, then, I mean, that's really the ultimate choice, right? We can then see that there is choice to stay here doing what we're doing, or we can create from there. But unless we accept where we are, I really don't think we find peace anywhere we go.
No. I mean, the key to getting in flow is to trust, or have the conditioned belief that you're always exactly where you're meant to be. Because you're right, from that place, if you're sort of denying or resisting what is, you can't change it. So if you're like, okay, the shit has hit the fan and I'm exactly where I need to be, so what can I learn from this and where can I go?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, Hayley.
Thank you.
It's been so nice to catch up.
Yeah, you too. Like the best kind of catch up ever, actually.
Yeah, I know how, because it's not often we get to sit down and just have an hour talking through our life, right?
Yeah.
Like that's really why I wanted to start this whole podcast, was because I'm surrounded by so many amazing people, and most of the time it's like, hey, how you going? What are you up to? Blah, 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 blah. But we don't really dive deep into how you got here. You know, it's like a lot of, I mean, I have deep conversations, but I'm always fascinated to hear the story behind how someone got to be the person they are right now in this moment. Obviously, it'll be different tomorrow, but it's always such a privilege to do it. So thank you so much for spending an hour with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me. That was so fun.
I know, so fun.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. Really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between app thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up Speak Up. Search Show Up Speak Up in Facebook, or head to carlynimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.